Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is John.
Hi, Jonathan Cohen?
Yes.
Jonathan Cohen, author of the best-selling book, Losing Big, America's Reckless Bet on Sports Gambling.
Oh, is this my mother-in-law? How did you apply the word best-selling to the front of it? But sure.
Well, I assume it's a bestseller. I see you on TV all the time, so, you know.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
So, well, thank you very much, in all honesty, for taking the time to talk to us today. I appreciate it. And I know you have been busy because I have seen you on TV quite a bit lately.
Yeah, okay.
And especially, I think, with all the stuff that happened however long ago it's been now, with the NBA and Chauncey Billups and sort of the beginning of the professional sports betting scandals. And it felt like after that, and I know it involved a lot of like poker games and the mafia and that stuff, but it still touched on these sports betting scandals. And then we've just kind of seen one after the other after that. A couple more basketball. There's some talk of stuff in the UFC. Then we had the two pitchers in the Major League Baseball. So, you know, is this one of those kind of moments where you're like, I told you so?
I would love to say yes. I mean, a little bit, yes. Because the promise of the sports leagues when this was legalized back in 2018 and when they began to pursue it in earnest was that basically that this wouldn't happen, right? That we would be making our games safer, more trusted, rather than less, by legalizing it, by bringing this into the light, by bringing it above ground. And of course, now they're claiming, oh, this is proof the system is working, right? This is proof that the legal regulated market is safer because now we've caught all these people with, of course, out any acknowledgement that a lot of these people probably wouldn't have been gambling in this way but for the version of sports betting, the sort of technologically supercharged version of sports betting that we got.
So there's a
whole other side of I told you so that's related to player safety and addiction, but we can get to that. But on the sports league side, yeah, I'd like to say I called some of it, or at least I called out some of the illogic that the sports leagues were using to get this passed in the first place.
So if I understand you correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't know this was a thing, but the leagues are saying, hey, look, because we've legalized sports betting, we have the tools in place to catch things like this and stop it before it gets out of control, and that's thanks to legalized sports betting, not thanks to it because, you know, that's what incentivized people to want to bet on sports more. It's because now that we've got it out in the open and it's legal, it's easier to catch these bad actors. Is that what they've been saying?
Yes, exactly. As if, of course, that they had no way to catch bad actors before, which, of course, they did. But, yes, that's the argument. The argument is, you know, we caught Terry Rozier. We caught Damon Jones. We caught this person who probably is Chauncey Billups, so that's a little bit up in the air, because they were stupid enough to gamble or have their associates gamble on legal regulated markets. And any legal regulated market worth their salt is going to pick up on the fact that someone is gambling, I think it was $80,000 on Jonte Porter parlays, but no one's even heard of Jonte Porter. It's like, that's a little suspicious. So again, this is the league's argument. Yes, prove the system works. We caught them so easily. Get ourselves a big pat on the back for protecting the integrity of American sports.
I have to ask you a question because it feels odd to me that they're like, oh, we'll notice if somebody bets the under on this player and then he takes himself out after 8 minutes and doesn't play anymore at the under. So I get why they would catch them, but I also think people who are invested in gambling at this amount of money with the ability to touch NBA players or MLB players, right, to actually get them to do, to have reach to them, would be smart enough to know, let's not bet $80,000 on under 9 points and then have the guy walk out injured when he scores eight. Like, don't they get it? Aren't they like, well, that would raise some red flags. Let's not do that.
Well, this has been the sort of the saving grace of the league so far, right, is that the stupidity of the associates and the stupidity of the gambler, of the players themselves.
Right.
And I mean, no offense to Terry Rozier, who I will always have a special place in my heart for winning the Celtics a second round series against the Milwaukee Bucks in 2018.
How much money did you have on that?
Yeah, exactly. But he was making $26 million a year and made something like $45,000 from his gambling. So I don't know if like the kind of person who's dumb enough to try to rig a game is smart enough to have figured that out. There is a way around that, which we can talk about, but this is why the focus right now on the regulatory side is on props, on fixing these bets that are about individual player outcomes. You know, this player to score under this many points or get under this many rebounds, that the leagues are now realizing is really dangerous and really susceptible to individual player manipulation.
Or this pitch to be a ball or a strike, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And
which is fun, by the way, during baseball season. I will say that live betting
keeps you betting.
It's like, man, they're like, will the next pitch be over 95 miles an hour or under 95 miles an hour? I'm like, man, it really puts you, it's fun for gamblers in a sense, like, all right, I'll put $2 on this. It's a 2-2 count. He should throw a fastball. You're right. Like, it's also, it's not only just gambling, it's also testing your knowledge of the game.
A little bit. I think that the pitch by pitch betting, that's like basically a slot machine. That's just, you could, there are lots of ways to leverage your knowledge of the game. I think someone who feels like they actually know sports and is sort of actually leveraging their knowledge, they're probably betting on like the game outcome or the over-under. Or yeah, maybe to your point, they're watching the game, they're seeing it unfold. Oh, the Guardians are now trailing by 5 runs. Oh, but I know that they're going to come back because of the Rangers' bullpen is depleted or whatever the case may be. Oh, I'm going to bet them because they're undervalued. But I think the pitch-by-pitch, that's like basically flipping a coin.
I will say, as someone who watches a ton of baseball and my oldest son going to play college baseball, we have sat at those games and been like, man, it's 2-2. He's not throwing him that curveball again. There's no way he's throwing him that curveball.
What I do next time, I win some money. That sounds
right.
Great.
So put $2 on. He's bringing him the heat right now. He's going to challenge him. And sometimes you're wrong, but that kind of tests your what would you call, what would you do? And if it's $2, it really is. I mean, I know I'm a gambling degenerate, but that is an actual fun way to spend an evening, kind of. And you only have four or five opportunities. I wouldn't do it on every pitch, but you know, all of a sudden, you know, well, you know. Here we go. He can't throw him that curveball again or whatever. Right. It makes it for an enjoyable evening.
Yes, and when you're doing makes it sound enjoyable, and my fear is really not someone like you. My fear is someone who basically has a gambling addiction or is unable to control themselves and isn't being smart, isn't only picking their spots, and is just looking to get dopamine hits every 5 seconds, and because that's 30 seconds, that's how quickly it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, certainly if you're betting every pitch, then it's a problem.
Yeah, then we got a problem. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well,
you touched on something a second ago that I wanted to come back to because it's something that I don't feel like people are talking about a lot, or at least not enough, and that is this idea that these pro players could be bought for what seems like a relatively low amount of money. When compared to the size of their contracts. Now, if someone offers me $20,000 to break the law, I'm all in. Who do I got to shoot? But for a player who's making millions of dollars, I don't know, could we have predicted that you could get to a pro athlete who had a contract worth tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions, for, you know, 20 grand? Hey, I want you to throw this ball in the dirt for 20 grand. And they'd be like, okay.
Right. I mean, this is where I couldn't make my JV baseball team in high school. So I'm not going to pretend that I understand the mindset of a professional athlete. But you got to wonder if they really thought they were ever going to get caught, if they really thought that they were so smart that they were going to pull this off. And in which case, no matter how much money you make, you know, if you found $45,000 on the ground, you're going to pick it up. So I wonder if that was not the calculus. And to answer a slightly different question, the fear here, putting aside professional athletes, would be college athletes, right? Most of them were not paid at all. Many of whom are just like living in a dorm, and how susceptible they must be, how vulnerable they must be to, you know, someone berating them, someone convincing them, someone blackmailing them, whatever, into, you know, some illegal nefarious gambling scheme.
Yeah, but that's why that's always been less surprising when you hear these stories about college
players. Yeah, because you hear a college football player,
they suddenly
have a nice
car, and you're like, what happened? Like, oh, he was point shaving. And you're like, well, of course, he wasn't getting paid. But then to see, you know, MLB
now they
pitchers,
are getting paid, and they're still doing it? Because, I mean, before these basketball ones, I mean, obviously, you're hip to all this, but isn't there like an Iowa football team thing or baseball team scandal that went like, they had to get rid of like six players, and it just kind of was reported in one day and then kind of gone, I guess.
Yes, and that one, I don't remember the details of that one specifically, but there have been a couple incidents, including a bunch of players of these sort of small program like Sacramento State or New Orleans University, something like that, these small basketball programs that were never going to make the tournament who were gambling on themselves. And that, to me, is, again, you can claim that this is the system working, but this is the system patting itself on the back for solving a problem of its own creation. There's no world in which you could bet on individual players at New Orleans University before gambling was legal and before this specific version of gambling came online. So, wow, congratulations. All you did was lure a bunch of 19-year-olds to gamble on themselves and then now reward yourselves or congratulate yourselves for catching them when they get caught.
So are you saying that the type of gambling that was happening before legalized sports betting, because we know there was gambling in sports, illegal gambling,
sure,
that it was just a much more basic who's going to win this game, who's going to lose, that kind of thing, and we didn't see these types of prop bets in underground gambling?
For the most part, yes. We absolutely did not see what are called micro bets, you know, the speed of the next pitch,
sure,
kind of thing. That's only possible with these regulated, licensed apps that have direct data partnerships with the sports leagues. But and the props, they existed, you know, especially for things like the Super Bowl, but not to this extent and not this many, and not being able to bet $80,000 on Jontay Porter unders. That was just unheard of, and that's, well, you know, sort of a big whoops by the league and by the companies that they allowed this to happen, and they're now sort of getting their comeuppance for it.
Well, so you seem really smart. You're an author. You wrote a book. I assume you've done your research. One of the things that fascinates me about this whole story is kind of the my very limited knowledge of the history of sports betting in the United States, and just kind of looking at Wikipedia articles about it and seeing where it was over time, and, you know, different courts hearing different cases about whether or not to legalize sports betting. And for so long, the leagues were, I'm pretty sure, based on Wikipedia articles that I recall, they were all in agreement that they wanted to keep sports betting illegal. When did that start to change? And because it seems like it happened quickly.
When FanDuel started sponsoring broadcasts? That's my guess. I don't know.
Yeah, all right. We'll do how. We have about 6 hours left. I hope,
sure,
that's enough time.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
Yeah. So it sort of happened slowly and then all at once, as these things tend to do. So, you know, in the early 90s, the sports leagues were vehemently against all things gambling, and they were the ones who sort of got gambling made illegal when states were sort of thinking about legalizing it for the first time. But then over the course of the 90s and early 2000s, some things happened. There were, as you already alluded to, some college basketball, especially gambling scandals. A big one at the University of Arizona, you might remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there was the Tim Donaghy scandal in the NBA in 2003, an NBA referee accused of colluding with gamblers to gamble on games that he was refereeing and potentially, you know, involved in point shaving himself. And then, so all these things are sort of pointing to the fact that keeping gambling illegal isn't actually protecting the integrity of sports, because it's, all these illegal gamblers are getting involved in sports anyway. And then there was the rise of daily fantasy sports in 2014, 2015, which is not gambling, but it's not gambling. It's just basically gambling sort of through under the guise of fantasy sports. And this, the leagues begin to reason, and Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, is the first one to articulate this, that basically there's so much effective gambling happening anyway, that people are basically gambling through these things like daily fantasy sports, then we might as well just hop on the bandwagon. And he writes the New York Times op-ed in 2014 saying, you know, we need a new approach. The NBA has been against legalized gambling for so long. I'm changing my position, or I'm changing the league's position. And then lo and behold, May 14th, 2018, comes the Supreme Court decision that legalizes sports gambling, and all the leagues that haven't already said that they changed their mind realize that they can make, you know, umpteen billion dollars a year, and then they change their mind too. So it's sort of, there was a build-up, and then the Supreme Court decision unleashed everything, and where there's money to be made, the sports leagues are going to make it.
Was fantasy sports, the popularity of fantasy sports, did, you know, when the NBA sees that and says, hey, you know, maybe we should just legalize actual gambling, was fantasy sports having a noticeable impact on the overall popularity of these leagues?
Yeah, it was. I mean, probably more so in fantasy's case for baseball and football. But it was clear that it was driving interest in the product, which is sort of the bottom line for these leagues, right? The thing they care about the most is getting butts into seats to watch games and to watch the commercials that air during games. And fantasy, as you probably know, is great at that, right? You really care about your fantasy players. You're more likely to watch more games when you have not money on the line in this case, but sort of you're competing against someone. You have a personal rooting interest. And I think that translates sort of really obviously into how, you know, I don't care about my team to win. I just care about the wide receiver in Cincinnati and the quarterback in Green Bay and the right. defense in New England and so on. That translates really well into the gambling mentality.
I liked it better when there was actual money involved. That's when it got fun. I mean, the fantasy thing, you know, everybody did. I felt like I was the one person who didn't, you know. Every single one of my friends is on these fantasy teams. And I'm like, so what do you guys do? But then once you got money involved, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I can just do this on my phone, get some money involved. Now I'm interested. And I totally understand it's the same type of logic. It's that suddenly I care about, as a sports fan, I might have cared before whether or not the Royals won or lost, whether the Chiefs won or lost, who they drafted, things like that. Okay, sure. But to care so much about what's going on across the league on any given day, it helped a lot when I had a vested interest.
Of course.
And it's made.
And you can make money off of it, or you think you can make money off of it.
Yeah, or lose money. Either one. I mean, you know, losing
probably
money.
Lose money, yeah.
Losing money is a hell of a feeling, too. I mean,
right, yeah.
You know, it's really.
It makes you want to win.
What's fun to me is losing before it even happens. Yeah,
yeah.
It's just having it there. It's like having a scratcher's ticket that I keep in my pocket for a week, and I think there's probably $1 million on that thing. I'm just going to wait, though. I keep forgetting I got that $1 million in my back pocket. It's just, it's fun. Now I understand that there's people who can't control their, you know, gambling or whatever, and that's always been a concern. It's always been a concern of regulators and the government, and it's why we had basically gambling illegalized everywhere but Nevada for so many years. But I do find it hard to believe that people weren't betting a whole lot of money on sports before it was legal, just because I watched all these people that I knew calling and placing bets with their bookies every
week. I think what he's saying is that guys like me, a degenerate gambler, had a bookie. We put the bets in. We got the sheet for every week, right? We did what we had to do. We gave it to him, and then we watched the games. And that was just, and correct me if I'm wrong, that was just a subset of us really, you know, into sports fans who would actually go out of their way to find that stuff. Now you have everyone in the world, certainly in the United States, who can just say, oh, look, you know, my husband's making me watch football. Why don't I put $10 on the Cowboys?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That wasn't something you could do when I first started gambling.
Yeah. No, I not to mention the fact that no longer do you only need to bet on the Cowboys and hand in your sheet. You could bet on Malaysian women's doubles badminton. You could bet on the next point in a Czech table tennis tournament. You could bet on Dutch handball.
Exactly.
You could bet on whatever
I bet on darts.
Right, yeah.
Darts. Yeah, one of the addicted gamblers who I profile in my book, he would be up at 3 a.m. in the morning gambling on minor league British darts because he just needed something to bet on.
And man.
That's the only thing that he could find.
I love it.
I can be friends with that guy. I bet a lot of darts. Well, you know, something about darts, they must just come up when there's nothing else left to gamble on. Now,
exactly,
I saw you
exactly.
In one of your appearances, you were talking about, this news about these scandals, these various scandals. Basically, you were saying that there were things we could have done to prevent this. And I'm wondering if the, you know, the prop bets and limiting those things, if that's what you were referring to. I know we've kind of already touched on that. Is that what should have been done, could have been done to prevent some of these, the types of scandals that we've already seen?
Yeah, those are the kinds of things. I'll sort of step back a little bit in terms of what I would have wanted. And, the word I use in the title of my book is reckless, right? The America's reckless bet on sports gambling, I call it. Not because sports gambling is bad, not because sports gambling should be illegal, not because we shouldn't have it on our phones even, but the way we rolled it out in this country was so reckless, so heedless, that we invited basically all of these crises, not just of sports integrity, but also related to player safety and gamblers running into trouble. And the idea is, rather than learn from Nevada, right, rather than learn from European countries, the United Kingdom has had legal gambling since 1961, online gambling since 2005. Rather than learn from any of these models, rather than learn from these models, we just rushed into the most aggressive version of gambling possible as quickly as possible, and now we're sort of paying the price for it. Oh, whoops. We had too many prop bets. We made it too easy to bet $80,000 on John Day Porter unders. Oh, whoops. We shouldn't have had a Malaysian women's double badminton because all that is just a way for people with gambling addictions to funnel their addiction. And my overall thesis, and we can talk sort of more specifics here, but my overall thesis is why it didn't have to be this way. We could have gone slower. We could have been more careful. We could have learned from the models that are out there, that we could have all had the ability to enjoy our $5 parlay on the Kansas City Chiefs or whatever the case may be and not had any of these other issues to deal with. But the leagues were greedy, the companies were greedy, the states were greedy with tax revenue, and that's what brought us to the crisis that we're in today.
All right, but let me ask you this, just because, and maybe it wasn't as much, but just to play the devil's advocate, I mean, we have the Black Sox. Like, that was a long time ago, man.
Yeah.
Guys have been throwing games for a long time.
Tim
Boxing is riddled with dudes doing that.
You know? Yeah, for sure. But again, like, it's just a matter of, so the Supreme Court decision came down in May 14th, 2018. Within 6 weeks, sports gambling was live in Delaware. Within a year, it was live online in Pennsylvania. Not just sports gambling in that case, but also online casino games, which are a whole other kettle of fish.
Right.
But would we really have endangered our games so much to have waited another year? Just to your point about the Black Sox is great. Sports gambling is going to threaten professional sports no matter what, no matter how legal it is or how illegal it is. Fine. Let's just take that as a given, and let's say, okay, can we prevent the other negative externalities, the other negative consequences? More people, these New Orleans University basketball players, from thinking that they can rig the game because the NCAA has really unclear guidelines of what players can do, or it hasn't spent the time to educate them. Why did we have to rush into this in 6 weeks when America doesn't do anything in 6 weeks? It takes us 60 years to build a highway. Why do we have to roll this out so quickly? And again, I think that's the problem is not with the product itself, not the existence of gambling, but it's the version of gambling we have and the way it was rolled out.
Okay, well, I'll listen. What did these other lesser non-American countries, what did they learn about gambling that we could have, learned from as well?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, we're America, right? So we don't have to learn from other countries. That's our birthright. I understand. But what's going on in the United Kingdom and in other countries right now is they are undoing, they are fixing the exact version of sports betting that we in the United States are busy building and creating. So just to take a specific point, in the United Kingdom, the government a few years ago put out a report on suicide, what they deemed a suicide crisis in the United Kingdom, specifically among young men. And one of the six pillars of that report, one of the six ways to fix the suicide crisis in the United Kingdom was regulating gambling. Gambling being the behavioral addiction with the highest correlation, the highest connection to suicide. So they are now in the process, as many other countries are, specifically of reducing advertising. That's usually sort of the first domino to fall. You know, in the UK, they're getting rid of soccer teams that have betting companies on their jerseys or like a patch on their jersey. Lots of countries are adopting what they call whistle-to-whistle bans. So while a game is going on, you can't advertise for a sports gambling company to prevent like a seven-year-old from watching sports and seeing a DraftKings ad or whatever the case may be. And then there are other countries sort of taking it a little bit further. Spain really tried to set really strict limits on app access. That hasn't worked. Or the Spanish Supreme Court, as I'm sure you know, sort of got involved. I'm sure you're really involved in Spanish legal politics.
Been reading about it quite a bit.
But there are other countries that are again, I'm not going to say yes that they've done it right, but they are working. They're adding these protections that I would have liked us to have had in the first place.
All right, so you're saying we rolled this out in 6 weeks, and this is something that we've talked about here that I thought, I don't necessarily know what the rules could have been to make it better. It seems like those micro bets are things that really people could take advantage of. That seems obvious to me. But we also heard these rules, like with Jameson Williams of the Lions. They're like, well, he gambled, and he gambled legally. It was fine, but he was in the parking lot of the...
Right.
Of the training. It wasn't at the stadium.
He was gambling on the NBA or something. Yeah,
it was at the parking lot of the training facility. On his way out, he dropped some money on FanDuel on something not involved with him whatsoever, and they're like 6-game suspension.
Yeah.
Because he was so I think a lot of times when we hear that story, and then we hear this person busted for gambling, we think, what was he, doing it from the locker room? You guys, like, why are you being, such dicks about this?
Right. And to me, this is another example, not to, to be a hammer to whom everything is a nail, but this is sort of another example of, if we hadn't rolled this out so quickly, if we'd been a little bit more patient, maybe Jameson Williams gets one more seminar, one more educational email or whatever Jameson Williams gets that tells him, reminds him what the rules are. And not to mention for these college players, I don't know if you know, but it was earlier this month, the NCAA completely changed its rules and now allows college athletes to gamble on professional sports. It's like, how are we still flip-flopping on this? How? No wonder these 18-year-olds with undeveloped prefrontal cortices, no wonder they're going to get confused and going to start gambling because they don't know anything. As a former 18-year-old young man, I was super stupid, and I would have been gambling all the time and not understood any of these rules. And it's just we didn't take the time to get it right, and we're now paying the price for it.
Was part of that, though, like, saying, oh, you're busted, and making a big spectacle out of it to show that, hey, we are serious about this, and we do catch everything, even little ticky-tacky shit like this.
Right.
You better not try something serious like throwing a game, because we'll catch you long before you get that far. Is that part of the conspiracy?
No, it's a great point. And if I was the NBA, I would be so relieved that I caught Terry Rozier, Damon Jones, and Chauncey Billups, and not LeBron James or Anthony Edwards or Luka Doncic or some superstar for whom it would be a absolute reckoning for sort of the integrity of the league itself. It would really shake the league to its core. But it brings up an interesting question. So yes, I think they absolutely are trying to make examples out of players like Jonte Porter just to set the stage to as a warning for other players. But what the NBA cares about the most is its reputation and people watching the NBA and caring about the NBA. And I don't know. Let's put the FBI aside. Let's pretend the FBI is sort of not part of the equation. If the NBA did catch wind that LeBron or Luka Doncic or someone of that magnitude was gambling, it's probably not in the NBA's best interest to make it public.
Exactly.
It's probably in the NBA's best interest to sweep it under the rug because, again, they care about the perception of integrity more than anything else. And that, to me, is like, okay, to some degree, Damon Jones, Terry Rozier, Chauncey Billups are a good test case, but in some cases, those are the low-hanging fruit because those guys are – nobody cares if they're out of the league. But everyone will care if something happens to someone like LeBron.
Let me ask you this, because that leads us back to, I mean, the question, did two people, did they sweep it under the rug? And that's Jordan, and right. The other one is Shohei.
Yep.
I mean, do you think that both those Shohei, are swept under the rug? Because those are the big names.
The Shohei thing always seemed a little strange to me.
But the Shohei thing, that's another interesting case where technically that has nothing to do with legalized gambling. Ife Mizuhara, his translator, is alleged to have gambled with bookies. To gamble terribly, by the way. By all accounts, he was like the worst gambler known to man. Like, he was losing like 80% of his bets or something. So whether or not Ohtani knew, there's no allegations that what his translator was gambling on was Ohtani related, if my memory serves. So yeah, maybe it seems like something weird was going on. You know, I don't know the dynamics between a translator and a you know, the greatest baseball star of the last 100 years, but maybe it, to your point, it's sort of in the league's best interest to pretend it didn't happen. And I know lots of folks. Bill, I was listening to Bill Simmons about this recently, who absolutely are convinced that Michael Jordan, the most competitive basketball player who's ever lived, did not just spontaneously decide to retire from basketball for no reason and was sort of secretly suspended by the NBA, and the NBA, you know, pretended or didn't make it public, right? They told him to take a breather for a year. He decided to go play baseball, not because he just wanted to play baseball, but because, allegedly because of he had all sorts of gambling-related malfeasances. So you can be as conspiratorial as you want, but these are the kinds of questions that the leagues are now facing that they might even more so than they did a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is conspiratorial because we have to go off what we know for sure, what they've told us. But when you hear the amounts of money that were involved in the Shohei thing and you hear gambling, then that conspiratorial part of your brain starts to go, wait a second. I mean, he didn't know that much money was moving. And wouldn't it just make more sense that he was having his translator go place these bets for him and that would look really bad, and they don't want that sort of, you know. And right. So it's easy to become conspiratorial. Once you, but it's also, if you're just being conspiratorial about it, then you can sort of forget about it later and be like, what was that whole Shohei thing? I don't remember. I remember thinking it was weird, but whatever. But when you have a story that says, this person threw balls in the dirt because somebody paid him $20,000 to do so, you go, ah, shit. That guy is on the take. And if you have that guy on the take become those guys, become that team, then it starts to become that league is, I don't know if they're on the up and up. They've had too many scandals. And it feels like this is something that obviously you said the number one priority of all of these leagues is the integrity of their sport. They'd get rid of sports betting right now.
Perceived integrity.
And if that meant they had to get rid of sports betting tomorrow, they would, because they want to keep that perceived integrity.
Of course, what they can't turn into is the WWE, which is also very popular. But baseball can't be like, we're going to watch 9 innings, and we already know that the Astros win. Like, right. I'd be like, fuck that.
And we got 5 leagues doing the
now
same shit.
Now you just
shit.
Have sports with no soap opera. Like, nobody's going to watch that.
Right. Well, let me tell you guys, even before sports gambling, lots of people thought that the NFL is in some ways rigged.
Exactly.
Specifically in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
People had all sorts of reasons to think that the league was rigged. And all you're doing now in American society that is, of course, extremely trustful of our major institutions, all you're doing is providing yet another reason to distrust sports. And this is exactly what the leagues feared when they opposed legalized sports gambling. They said they didn't want people to interpret, you know, routine player or referee error as, you know, a result of rigging as a WWE-like phenomenon. They wanted to see, okay, that's just part of sports, which of course it is. But people were already prone to see sports as rigged.
Right.
Already prone to see the refs as in favor of the Chiefs because they weren't getting any holding calls in the Super Bowl. And now they have money on it. That's only going to accentuate their anger and distrust with the professional.
And before the Chiefs, it was the Patriots. I mean, this has always been a thing since I was a kid. You know, maybe it was a little more direct, like, oh, you know, that team paid that ref or whatever it was. But it made sense that's why these leagues said, we don't want this because we already have enough people out there bitching and moaning about it. You know, what is pass interference and what isn't. So I understood why they were against it. And you're explaining to me, you know, suddenly we see fantasy sports become big. We see the NBA say, hey, look at this. This is basically already gambling. Look at all the money that we could be making. That makes sense to me. I'm a little surprised, maybe not a lot, but a little surprised at least, that maybe the NFL wasn't like, hey, we don't really want it, though, because we're the biggest sport in the country. We are America's religion, and our perceived integrity is everything. We make so much money already that... But it's never enough.
Not enough. I think they were probably looking at, you know, Microsoft running an NFL fantasy site, and they're like, we're not getting fucking any of this.
That's what I say. I'm a little...
Give me more of that pie.
A little surprised, but...
There is a legitimate case to be made for the NFL to say, if gambling is going to be legal, which it was, of course, by courtesy of the Supreme Court, then the NFL has to be involved in it in some way, in a way that actually would sort of protect the integrity of its product. There is sort of a baseline argument to be made. But to your point, the NFL has exceeded that, right? It has sort of gone above and beyond in terms of the advertising partnerships, in terms of the data sales, and all sorts of other boring behind-the-scenes things, where the league is making more money from gambling than it has to, quote unquote. But as you said, it's never enough. You know, the leagues, you know, why do we have a 17-game schedule all of a sudden? You know, because the leagues wanted more money. And so, yes, you're right. I've spoken to a source who, you know, has connections to all the sports leagues. And he said that the NFL was the only sports league that really didn't want to win the Supreme Court decision. That really would have been okay with the Supreme Court keeping gambling illegal, because yes, it is of course driven interest in the NFL. It has sort of gotten the league's revenue arrow pointed even farther upward. But the sports gambling infrastructure was just fine for the NFL. They were already top of the heap. No need to rock the boat. No need to threaten it. No need to open the door to all these scandals, which is of course what's happened. But then of course also they've made like $3 billion a year or something like that. So sure.
Okay, well that's all. I guess
they could wipe their tears with their Benjamin Franklins. You know,
I think an interesting thing, maybe the unintended consequence, is sports have always been like that, right? Like we've always thought that. We've always had the idea like that guy dropped it on purpose, or how the hell did you miss that, or that was a strike. Why is he calling it a ball, right? We've always had that even when we weren't gambling. Now, for guys who gambled well before it became legal, we would sit around with other gamblers and be like, this game's fucking fixed, right? We'd throw our cheat sheet in the air and walk out. But then there's people from the other side who's like, no, it was holding. And you have that and it's no big deal, right? And that goes on and most people aren't gambling. I think the idea that you're getting to is, I have $20 on the team that's playing the Chiefs. And if you call roughing the passer one more goddamn time on my defense,
I'm out. I'm invested monetarily now.
Yeah. And yeah. I hate the sport.
That's a lot more than being a fan.
It almost hurts the Chiefs, right? Because like we got to be careful.
Right, yeah.
this is the sort of the deal with the devil that the leagues have made, right? In the short term, it's driving interest in their product, it's driving engagement with their product. But over the long term, you sort of, as you've said, sort of create grounds for frustration and for people to quit interest in their product. And you're also not even like creating sports fans. You're just creating young men who like to gamble and are happening to choose sports to gamble on. But for all their concern, they might as well gamble on, you know, election outcomes or the stock market or crypto. So, you know, I'm 35, right? I had a long time to watch sports without gambling, and now I can use gambling to augment my fandom, to make the games more exciting. But 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, they're not getting sort of the pure, quote unquote, pure version of sports and then layering gambling on top of it. It's mixed up from the beginning. So I'm not sure how this is going to work out for the leagues in the long run if they don't actually have any fans of the Kansas City Chiefs. They're just fans of gambling on the Kansas City Chiefs, and once they stop gambling, they don't actually care about football anymore.
Interesting. That's an interesting angle. I hadn't thought of that. I guess I don't think of... First of all, I'm guessing that most people still aren't gambling, but also that the people that are gambling, generally speaking, aren't gambling astronomical amounts, aren't gambling the house away.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
They're ticky-tacky amounts and, you know, makes it fun, like we said, or whatever. And it could even be substantial in the sense of, like, it's $100, you know.
Right, yeah.
But I would just tend to think that it could make you, because you're more invested in the sport and you learn more about the players, that means that now that I know more about the sport, I can have that conversation at the water cooler that my... you know, road that I was headed down. I was always going to kind of watch the games on TV, but I was never going to know enough to talk to the guys at the water cooler.
Yeah,
now
I think
if
nothing else, if you're gambling, it's a knowledge that you are slowly picking up, even at 17, 18, 19, about, as a casual fan, you don't know who the third wide receiver is for the Chiefs. But as a bettor, and you're like over 40 yards, right. Now you do. You're more invested in it, right?
Yeah. Right. Here's sort of an existential question, right? Are you more knowledgeable about sports, or are you more knowledgeable about gambling on sports? And that, and to me, is like, okay, I hear frustration all the time. It's one thing to listen to a gambling podcast, you know, or gambling radio, gambling TV. Fine, go. Everyone should have the kind of content that they want. But it's another thing for ESPN to have gambling talk as part of sort of general sports talk and make it unavoidable for someone. So I don't know if we're going to like what it looks like when sports become sports gambling, when sports media becomes sports gambling media. I don't know how well that's going to sustain and how many people are going to sort of drop out as a result.
Well, the one thing they can't have is have people think it's the WWE and that it's rigged.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You say the gambling. I mean, was my, you know, your girlfriend or whoever's girlfriend or friend, you know, that you got involved with fantasy football so that you could watch football on Sundays, and they didn't want to watch it, but now all of a sudden they're vested in it because they got a team and they picked their players. I don't know. I feel like they became football fans to some degree, more than what they were.
Yeah, that's probably true. But again, the question is, gambling is not fantasy, right? Gambling, you're losing money. Gambling, you can develop an addiction. Gambling, you can find, you know, someone who has an addiction or so on. And it's a little more, a little sharper, a little edgier than something like fantasy, which is, in my sense, sort of pretty benign.
And I'm not trying to just play devil's advocate here, but
no, please,
I would say that, you know, when you're talking about ESPN can't turn into, you know, sports gambling, if you already cared about sports enough that you're watching cable, you know, 24-hour cable television, talking about, you know, the backup catcher and wherever, then I feel like you were kind of already at this level. And also, on the flip side of that, I listen to a podcast every week about the stock market, and I don't invest really in the stock market. I just find it interesting, and it's these guys seem kind of cool to me. I'm like, man, it's cool. These guys make a lot of money. Ooh, they lose a lot of money, too. I feel sort of cool listening to it, and I do find it sort of interesting, but I don't really invest in the stock market. So I think that's right. A possibility, too.
Yeah, but you're also not 13 years old. That's sort of my problem is, you know, this seven-inning stretch brought to you by FanDuel. Oh, Dad, what's FanDuel, or what does it mean that the Braves are minus 220 to win the game? To me, that's goes to the point of getting people who already want to gamble, who, again, should be able to gamble, to not indoctrinating, but sort of
less exposure,
setting children up to be gamblers rather than just be sports fans.
So you'd like to try and limit the exposure to minors so that they're not thinking about gambling all the time. They're not thinking that gambling is absolutely what I'm going to do when I turn 18. It's a rite of passage, which I get it. I mean, that's sort of, you know, with alcohol, the kids saw the commercials for years and everything, and they said that sort of led to this idea that when you're 21, what do? You go get fucking hammered, right?
Right.
And so over time, like, maybe we should, you know, try and figure out who's watching, who's listening, those sorts of things. So it sounds like that's part of the solution that you'd like to see, like what they're doing in other countries, removing some of the advertising on sports jerseys and things like that. What else would you like to see?
Yeah, I mean, the key word, if I was going to sort of boil it all down, would be this idea of friction, which is the apps should let you gamble, but they should make it almost impossible to develop an addiction, right? And the way you develop an addiction, we know sort of scientifically, is through things like loss chasing, right? You lose a bet, you get mad, you double down, you chase it, you lose it, double down, chase again. All of a sudden, your bets have gone from increments of $5, increments of $50, increments of $100. All of a sudden, you've gone from spending $50 in a month to spending $1,500 in a night, or whatever the case may be. So slowing down the process by adding speed bumps along the way so that someone who loses $5 on the Cubs isn't going to run into trouble because of a single bad night, and that's going to sort of rewire their brain toward gambling. So things like when you deposit money into your account, you need to wait 12 to 24 hours to gamble with it. Maybe you can only deposit a certain number of times over the course of a day or a week. Get rid of some of these micro bets that we've been talking about, you know, the speed of the next pitch stuff, or maybe even these insane betting markets. You know, people in Colorado still bet $14 million every month on ping pong. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why do you need to offer a market on ping pong?
Things like that
I think are pretty intuitive and that I think are pretty common sense.
Things that they've already done. I mean, we had, you know, when we got casinos here in Missouri, there were a lot of rules originally like that in place. You know, you can only deposit this much money, you know, you can only take out this much money at a time, whatever. So that sort of stuff, I don't think would be too shocking to anyone. The problem is, you know, once you give somebody something, trying to take it away is a little bit harder.
Which is all in service of my point of we unleashed the most aggressive version as quickly as possible, and now we need to roll it back. Whereas we could have done what Brazil is doing right now, actually, which is starting with a more regulated, sort of more careful model. And then as things prove to work, as we sort of understand how the system works, we can unfurl them. We can make them more aggressive as we go rather than the other way around.
I am going to push back just a little bit, though, on one more thing that you said there, because you're talking about, you know, the best way to become addicted to these things. And I would say that they already kind of have in place really, really good ways of keeping people addicted, because I think the best way to become addicted to gambling is to win a bunch of money. And it's real hard when you go to the casino or when you're betting on sports to win a bunch of money. The odds are when you go and you play, you know, those first few times. When I went to the casino, however many times I went, the first few times that I was old enough, I didn't win any money. And I was like, this is boring and I don't really want to, you know. So I always kind of went back. It was like because someone else wanted to go. It wasn't until I won some money that I was like, oh, this is kind of fun, you know. And you're saying that, you know, people are more likely to lose than they are to win. Well, that sort of, in a lot of ways, helps more than anything, doesn't it? Not to say that people don't want to double down and try and win their money back. I get that some people have that instinct.
I think you guys are missing the sweet middle there. It's not losing or winning. Both of them feel fine. I think what they could stop doing, maybe, is that no sweat bet.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
It's that free bet. We'll give you free money. Put $5 in. We'll give you $200 worth of tokens. Now I'm a little bit more invested,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
The absolute worst thing that can happen to a gambler is winning their first bet, and this perception that it's really easy, and that perception that they have it figured out, and that they're going to be able to keep their hot streak going forever.
That's what gets you
addicted. And you know it's a little addictive because, look, if I go to the casino, too, if I roll into Harrah's in Kansas City, they're not like, hey, good to see you. Here's $200.
Right.
They don't say that.
Exactly.
Or you lose.
Hey, you know what? Go gamble. It's a no-sweat Tuesday. And if you lose your ass, we'll just give it back to you, buddy. That never fucking happens. So I'm like, there's got to be a reason why they do it on the phone. And I'm guessing it's because it gets me to log in more.
And then they have these promotions like bet, you know, up to $20 on the Buffalo Bills to complete a single pass.
Right? Yeah.
And you get you win $200. No shit, the Buffalo Bills are going to complete a single pass. They want you to think that it's easy. They want you to sort of have this blind faith and overconfidence that even, I can tell you, even after you could lose your next 11 bets, and you're like, oh, I'm just on a bad streak. I know I'm good at this because I won my first one.
Well, and I'll agree with you that, you know, I'll take your word for it because it sounds perfectly reasonable that the best way to get addicted is to, you know, win your first bet, right? Yeah. Because that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I didn't really want to start going to the casino until I finally won something. It just happened to take me a while. But I would say the second best way to get someone addicted is to take away the pain of a loss, which is kind of what we're talking about, too. It's like, not only did you help win, but you took away the pain of what should have been, you know, a painful loss. And that little pain that you're supposed to be there where you're like, I'm not going to do that again today. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow.
You're sort of chasing your losses in order to get rid of that pain. And it's sort of course, only going to lead you further into despair.
Yeah.
And they do it on smart things, which are fun to watch. I mean, I take advantage of it all the time. I think if you're gambling online, you're not taking the boosts and you know, no sweat bets and the free bets. Why not? I don't understand.
Yeah.
But, $5, pick somebody to hit a home run. If you don't give it, we'll give you the $5 tomorrow. Well, then I'm picking people to hit home runs every day. I did it every day during baseball season.
Well, we haven't really talked about the elephant in the room here, which is not just gambling for a long time. What kept the lights on in Las Vegas, as you guys probably know, is that you had to gamble $110 to win $100, right? And that $10, that's what kept the lights on in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
But these days, that's not how people are gambling, specifically young people. They're gambling $5 on these insane parlays that end up at plus 45,000 or whatever.
Yeah, that's the only thing I like to do.
I love it.
That's my favorite. I love it. I love it. I love it. I want to do it right now, actually.
That's fine. But that accentuates the sort of the chasing phenomenon, the thrill, the perception of a win. You know, if you win your first parlay, you're going to think you're just touched by God and that you can't miss. And these are all things that are just making it the modern version of sports betting more dangerous.
But how is that different from a slot machine that has a big thing above the top of the progressive jackpot that says
it's not,
10 million?
It's not. That's exactly what they want. And I live in Connecticut, one of seven states that has literal slot machines on your phone.
Right. Okay. But you said that in Vegas, you know, the elephant in the room is that in Vegas it took them this much money and whatever. So, okay. Yeah. I thought that we were saying what was different about sports betting. And you're saying it's not. It's the same. Because to me, the parlay is the same as taking a pull of the slot machine lever.
But here's what's different about Vegas, right? To go to a slot machine, you have to be upright and awake and sitting at the machine pulling the
barely, lever. I promise.
Right. But if you want to bet on sports, you have to walk up to the counter. You have to put cash on the counter. You got to order off the menu and so on. And these days, you can just sit on your phone in your underwear betting your mortgage payment on Dutch handball or whatever. That's what's fundamentally different is the friction that we've completely erased and the ease with which we've made it to gamble.
Yeah.
And you're right. Even when you're gambling with bookies like I was, you know, I couldn't call them midway through the Yankees game and go, hey, I want to put 20 on Stanton to hit one out here. He'd be like, dude, if you call me again, I'll fucking kill you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right? That wouldn't have happened.
Who's my
11 o'clock at night, I'm calling. I'm like, I think we got a good one, boss. You'd be like, I swear to God, you're dead to me.
Well, you can gamble, right. So the only difference there is with the bookie, as you guys know, you can gamble on credit, right? Which is sort of another friction that's erased. But, you know, bookies are going to be around for that exact reason until, you know, my 3-year-old's grandchildren are gambling. So, you know, there's nothing to do about that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, that the whole gambling thing. Do you think they will try to fix it? Will they try to do things? Or do you think the cat's already out of the bag and here we are, and we're just going to continue to catch people who are shaving points or whatever and put them away, and that's all we can do?
They're going to try to do something that looks like that they're going to fix it. Whether the thing that they're going to try to do actually fixes it, I don't know. But, you know, Charlie Baker, the head of the NCAA, he's been trying to get rid of college player props, which I think is an easy start. The NBA and its sports league partners, even a few months ago, they got rid of props on G League players, you know, on players on two-way contracts, things like that. So I think we're going to see some marginal changes. You know, maybe these micro bets, I think they're probably going to limit the amount you could bet on the speed of the next.
And they're going to want it to work, though, right? I mean, if they start to worry about the perceived integrity of their sport, they're going to want to make changes hope work.
Instead of the rules that they made for the players, my thought was, doesn't this all end, conceivably, it goes back to what it was before, which is the Pete Rose, Black Sox, every once in a while type of thing, right? Yeah. If they just say, hey, when you sign your contract to play in the NHL, the MLB, the NFL, the NBA, whatever it is, you're done gambling. If you get caught gambling on anything, you're done. That's it. That's in the rules. I know we have to negotiate that with the Players Association, but that's going to be in the contract. You can gamble on sports, but not from the parking lot. Just get rid of it. If you are
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with all sorts of ideas, but it's like, again, as you said, the parking lot thing, the back and forth, the NCAA, the fact that I don't blame the players for getting confused, and some of them for making honest mistakes. Some of them are making dishonest mistakes. But I don't think we should be surprised that when we're back and forth, we're fixing this, we're fixing that, that these things happen. And again, not to sort of come back to the same point, but it's the thesis of my book, so I'm going to, is that we did this so quickly, we did this so recklessly, that these, I think, is an inevitable result, not of sports gambling, but of the way we did it.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, obviously you've put a lot of thought into this and studying and that kind of stuff.
A little.
And yeah, I always compared in my head sports gambling to the stock market. Like, there's people in charge who know more than me. There are CEOs and vice presidents, them being GMs and coaches and players and people. But I can study a lot of information. I can try to figure out numbers. And at some point, yes, gambling is a game of chance, but I can put the odds in my favor the more I study it, just like the more I'm studying a company, Apple, and I'm going to buy, or Amazon, I'm going to buy their stock at this much and then dump it out here. All of those things, like, we do have people who study these things and use it like the stock market. All the things that you're saying that hit me were, oh, the suicide rate of gamblers and all these things. But we never talk about dudes jumping out of buildings in New York City because they lost all their money on their 401k or whatever the fuck they invested in. It's just gambling, right?
Yes. And that's actually more so true now because of, I don't know if you guys know Robinhood, the sort of app.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. When you said that, I was like, and people can just put $50 on whatever. It's the same. It's the same adrenaline rush.
Right. I totally agree, except the difference with Robinhood, and there are, I'll just say, there are reported cases of young men, especially, like, taking their own lives because of huge losses and all these calls that they have on Robinhood. But the difference, of course, is that the stock market is unlikely to tank in, like, an hour or, like, resolve in, you know, a matter of a few minutes, whereas if I bet my parents' mortgage on, you know, the speed of the next pitch, like, okay.
Well, that's assuming you have a diversified portfolio. Don't forget, I listen to a stock market podcast. If I'm just betting on one crazy stock that day, it could absolutely take a shit the same day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think the point is that it is an educated guess, where being educated about the bet separates it from playing a slot machine.
Okay. But and I'll tell you, it's more like the stock. Here's the other way it's like the stock market. Because when you're betting on the stock and you think you're so smart, I promise there's someone at Morgan Stanley who has a computer a million times smarter than you, and you're the sucker, right? If you can't see the sucker in the room, it's you. If you're gambling on the stock market as an individual, you are almost certainly the sucker.
Right.
In the same way, I saw this during the NBA Finals. Someone posted from, I think this is from an internal FanDuel data or somewhere. They had a chart with the bounce ball trajectory of every missed three-pointer in the NBA over the course of the previous season. So
nice.
You do all the research you want on the NBA. If your model doesn't include bounced ball trajectory of missed three-pointers from the right corner or whatever, then your model is not as good as FanDuel's model, and you are going to lose.
I think that's what I was saying. That's the same as the stock market. I know that I can be educated, and it's better to be educated when I invest in the stock market than not be educated, but I'll never be as good as the guy at J.P. Morgan.
Boy, that guy, he's got me fucked. But, you know, if I can kind of figure out where he's going, and if this company makes sense, then it's the same way of me, like, hey, look, you know, the Cowboys have lost two in a row, but Dak's going to be back, and Dak against the Giants has had 300 yards in the last two games. Like, all of a sudden, I'm playing in the same world, at least. I'm not just randomly putting a dollar in a random machine, pulling the lever, and seeing what happens.
I think we can convince ourselves we're playing in the same world, and we can feel like we're smart, and we feel like we have knowledge, and it's a lot of illusion of control. It's a lot of this. It basically boils down to luck, and this is true for the stock market, too, and I'll say this as someone who only buys index funds and just sits on them, and I'm not sort of buying.
So you're saying that's interesting. So you think I could go to someone, and this is, I don't have the answer, so. But you think I could go to someone, a guy like me who watches college football all the time, I could go to someone and make bets, let's just say win or lose games, right? With the points. We'll say with the points, so that'll make it harder. And I could say, all right, here's the list of games today. Pick five games. And then I could go to somebody who never watched college football, has no idea who's good or who's bad, and have them pick five games. And over the course of the year, we would be equal?
Not equal per se, but first of all, we're talking about, I think if that person, you know, for example, if they pick chalk, right, if they were just picking the favorites or they're picking by ranking, I think they would do, maybe they pick 48%, the other person picks 52% or something like that. But like we're talking small
That's
margins.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fair. I just didn't know if they're, you know, how we would figure that.
I don't mean to suggest it's complete luck. And I'll tell you personally, like, I'm a big Celtics fan, and sometimes you just watch it and you know your team doesn't have it, and I would bet against them in a heartbeat because you just know they don't have it tonight, and you just have a sixth sense about your favorite team sometimes. And I understand.
Or you just know that the Colorado Rockies suck, because if I don't know anything about baseball or the Rockies, then I'm thinking, well, this team has to win three in a row eventually. Like, no, they fucking don't. I promise
they
don't.
20 years. Yeah, exactly. So, no, I'm not saying it's that, like, the stock market is complete luck or that sports betting is complete luck. But I think individual gamblers, no matter how complicated their system is, they just have a perceived overconfidence or a perceived sense. They think really highly of themselves and their model and how complicated it is.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. Is FanDuel that good? Because here, I'll tell you, and I've told this story before, but when I was a teenager and I think maybe, I don't remember when I got out of the Navy or whatever, I went back to Detroit and I was living in Detroit and I got a job at a sports booking place before gambling was legal, before casinos were in Detroit. And what he did was, you didn't bet on the game, you paid for information.
Right.
And so we would, there'd be like five of us, and we'd sit around this table, and then the guy who owned it, he had an office, and these guys would pay like $200 a month for information. You'd give them the Vegas line and all that, so they could call and ask questions, who the umpire was, how many strikes he called last game, anything you wanted to know we had. It was all on these computers. On these computers, we're just there, but whenever they called and they would ask a big question, like, you know, well, who's the ump and what he did last week? Literally, they told you, put it on hold and say, hold on a second, I'm going to give my guys in Vegas right now. Hold on. You put it on hold and walk over to this computer that, you know, looked like it was built in 1920, put in the name and it would spit out the information to you, and then you give them that information. Now, the other thing that they did besides that was you could get a guarantee on a game from our owner. And it was just information. They'd say, okay, you call, you get me, you talk to him, and then the guy would say, well, give me the guarantee. And he said, well, I guarantee, you know, Dallas wins minus the points.
Right.
And the guarantee is $500. And the guy's like, well, all right.
You know that.
Yeah. I will pay you the $500 for that information. And if you're wrong, you pay me back, right? Yes, I pay you back plus the $500. Anyway, so there I'm just paying for guaranteed information on not betting. He would do it all the time. And what made me think about that, and I've thought about it a lot, is that we would go in there every day, and, you know, guys would call from all over the world, really. And the guy that he would go out to lunch with the most was Bobby Ross, the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Bobby Ross would show up and they would go out to eat all the time.
Uh-oh.
Well, now that I look back on it and I think about it, I mean, they could have just been friends. Or, I mean, where are we at now? And is that what we're saying is happening with FanDuel? One, is FanDuel blowing more smoke up my ass than, like, hold on a second, let us get with our Vegas people, and it's all nonsense, right? Like, they don't know anything fucking more than we do. And the guy was talking to me, right? I mean, he would run ads on the radio, that'd be say, call now 1-900 whatever, and, you know, our college football expert Laszlo will give you the pick of the week. I'm like, dude, I'm 16, bro. Like, I, you know, right? But then I go into this room and just record a machine, be like, hey, don't forget, you know, Oklahoma State still sucks. You know, take the other team minus the whatever 10,000 points. That's all we did.
You know, first of all, this is the plot of that movie Two for the Money with Matthew McConaughey and Al Pacino. So
I've never seen it. Is that true?
That's true. I hope you got credit for it or something. Yeah, McConaughey's a booker at a place like this.
I've never seen it. Do they work in one of those things before, like, gambling was popular?
Yes. Yes, the movie makes no sense, and it's terrible. But, yes, that is the plot.
Okay.
McConaughey is sort of the hotshot picker who goes to work for Al Pacino at one of these outfits. Billy Walters.
By the way, just to interrupt you real quick, I don't think he thought any of us were hotshot pickers. I think he thought we could talk on the phone and sound confident.
Right, and look good on TV. Or
yeah,
whatever.
It wasn't like, do you watch sports? Nobody talked about sports in there. It was like, he would have the sheet and read it to us. Read that. Okay.
Yeah, and so, again, I don't mean to dispute the idea that, like, someone can be good at sports gambling, right? Like, Billy Walters, all these professional gamblers are out there. But what they're doing is, as you've already alluded to with the Bobby Ross example, right, is they are leveraging inside information in most cases. Or these days, what professional gamblers do, it's not like they know the towel boy in the Green Bay Packers locker room and they know that Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love in this case is like a little bit more injured than he's letting on. He's not practicing this week and it's not, that information isn't public yet. It's more like they've figured out an arbitrage opportunity. You know, it's plus at this book and it's minus at that book. So they, you know, they can gamble 10,000 on both sides and guarantee themselves a small profit. Or, you know, they can build a parlay where these two legs are more correlated than the books are giving them credit for. And you can sort of have a plus expected value. That's what it's really about these days, at least, with sort of the new version, is just finding positive expected value, not guaranteeing yourself a win. You know, as you guys know, any professional gambler worth their salt would be overjoyed to win 55% of their bets, 60% of their bets.
Of course.
You know, 52% of their bets. You could make a living off that if you're gambling the right amount of money.
When they started, you know, FanDuel or whatever and it became popular, are they surprised at the amount of people, myself included, who do throw that $2 on a parlay, a 16-leg parlay, trying to hit for $100,000? Were they surprised? Did they think, look, people are going to come in here and bet games, they'll be responsible, and what they ended up finding was everybody over the age of 18 on Saturday is betting $5 on a 20-leg parlay, and that they weren't ready for that?
No, the sources at FanDuel that I've talked to have claimed that they want to be consumer-facing. They want to be like, you know, Coca-Cola in the grocery store, right? Like, they want to be everywhere. They want everyone to use their product, you know, the equivalent of Facebook or Instagram or whatever.
Right.
The economics doesn't actually work out that way, right? Last NFL season, 82% of the money gambled on the NFL came from just 3% of gamblers. 60% of the money came from just 1% of gamblers. So whether the company's sort of living up to that standard that it set for itself, I don't know. But it certainly talks the talk of someone that wants to be broad-based, that wants to be on everyone's phone, and just wants to make a little bit of money here and there from a lot of different people.
Wow. That's crazy, but I guess it's, you know, it goes back to kind of...
One last question for you, because I want to get back to this, and you've kind of mentioned it, but, you know, watching all the movies over the years and Casino and whatever, you kind of said, like, making it legal, or at least they're saying making it legal would take it out of, you know, the backroom bookies and put it out in front of everybody. That was the same kind of idea that they used with putting casinos in major cities, right? Instead of it just being, you know, Atlantic City and Vegas, now every city's got casinos, and they're like, look, now people are going to go there, and the betting will be above board, and you won't have bookies and people breaking people's legs for, you know, 10% of the VIG or whatever, right?
They will, but yeah.
Right, yes, but was that the idea here? If we bring gambling out of, you know, people are gambling anyways, but if we put it like the guy in Casino, when he said, you know, everything changed when MGM bought casinos, everything changed when the big corporate guys got here. They didn't, you know, wine and dine people. They didn't care. It's about turning tables and how much money and all these other things. So are you taking it out of De Niro's hands in Casino and putting it in a CEO's hands? And, you know, he's not the guy who wants to rig this stuff. He just wants to make shareholders money. And if it's rigged, he won't.
Yeah. And, well, this is, well, it's, just in terms of your the spirit of your question as to whether this is what got us here, right? In some cases, yes, right? In some cases, was the logic of, okay, people in America, you know, culturally, politically, whatever, are clearly warming to gambling, right? Are clearly think that gambling is more acceptable than they did 100 years ago. So the sort of barriers are beginning to fall. And it's not just that gambling is illegal, so we might as well legalize it, but it's also that we might as well legalize it so that we can make money, so that that we can generate tax revenue. Gambling is always a small sort of pittance of tax revenue if you look in the grand scheme, but that really has been the logic. And yes, as you sort of alluded to, the state government, which is of course now going to, you know, it runs the lottery, but for sports betting, it, you know, casinos, it, you know, partners with these companies, they way rather deal with MGM, FanDuel, Caesars, whoever, not, you know, Ace Rothstein or the like. So I think that was just sort of a precondition for going legit, was getting the mobsters out of business and right. getting the company in business.
Do you got any money on any games this weekend?
No, I mean, I'm a pretty big Pats fan. I don't know if I like Joe Burrow coming back. I can't, and he's got a short week next week. So I think the Pats can play the SmackDown without Chase. So I think they're -7.5 right now. I think I'm okay with that number.
So you're still, after all this, you're still a gambler.
I mean, yeah, but I'm in that 60% of gamblers who contribute 1% of revenue. I put $100 worth of unders on, or sorry, $100 in unders on, you know, 10 different players or something at the beginning of the season, and then $10, $12 here and there, and that's about it.
Right.
I also have a feeling you're really bad at it because, I mean, you don't end up writing a book like Losing Big, America's Reckless Bet on Sports Gambling, unless you're really pissed off about how bad you are.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Jonathan Cohen, the book, like I said, flying off the shelves, bestseller. Last I heard, a best-selling book maybe ever in the months of October, November.
You also
wrote
a book about Springsteen. I'd like to have you back on and talk about that.
I don't think he's a gambler, but he certainly made enough money to be one.
He took a gamble on a couple of those albums. What are you working on next? I'm always curious what the next project is.
Yeah, I don't have a book lined up, but I sort of, we've been talking, as I hope it's clear, is that the landscape around sports gambling hasn't settled yet, and there's still a lot of conversations, and I still think we have a chance to get it right. So I'm involved as an advocate, really, on helping make it right and on helping fix some of these efforts. And I'm happy to share more about that, you know, once they become official. But I don't have another book yet because this one, I think there's still more work to do in the space.
All right. And where can people find you?
Yeah, my website is just jonathandcohen.com. The book, as you mentioned, Losing Big. I actually do answer emails when people email me. So if folks want to get in touch, my email is on my website.
Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, and if you see Josh Allen, tell that son of a bitch he cost me a lot of money last night.
Me too.
How did they lose that game?
Is good, man. That's your fault. The Houston defense is good, and weird things happen on Thursday night. That's on you.
That's on me. All right, fair enough. See you, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Hey, everyone. It's Summer, exec producer for the Church of Laszlo, and thank you for listening to Toxic and Problematic. Thank you to Kenny at Middlecake Construction and Dick Ray Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling for keeping Slim Fast warm in the winter and cool in the summer. See you next week.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.